Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Jared Hamatashian, author of You Know It's True, my recent and final collection. I don't even know what the point of mentioning the book is. Are people buying the book based on these podcasts? I have no idea. I don't really track any of this, so I'm just
I think anyone who bought a book already, listens to this podcast, has done so.
In my experience, when people message me on Goodreads, they'll say, oh yeah, I listen to the podcast. I don't know if there are people who are listening to the podcast and then getting our stuff rather than people who've already gotten our stuff and then start listening to the podcast. So I rescind all my comments before about asking you to buy the book.
Well, I'm Derek Sertag. You should totally buy my stuff. The Field Guide to Nachos, Nachos and You, and Recipes in the Nachonomicon, as well as the William O'Podge and role-playing game, Great Caesar Dream of My Death, all available at nachonomics.com.
So we had a pretty smart idea for our podcast, being like, hey, why don't we start watching movies for a bit that we actually wanted to see?
You know? The fans demanded it. We didn't want to do it, but here we are.
The benefits of your own podcast is you get to watch sometimes instead of making up, you know, the silly little things we do about watching shitty holiday movies. Or, I mean, I can't really remember a series we did where we didn't really entirely want to watch the movie. But this is just a series of like, hey, movies we've been planning on watching for a while and never got around to, so now we're gonna do it.
Yeah, it's a grab bag.
Yeah.
So grab your bag and let's dive in.
I mean, I guess there's some connections we could piece together here, but both on Shudder.
Yeah, next week's gonna have a whole lot of connections.
That's its own miracle right there, right? Two movies we wanted to see on Shudder. Oh boy. Get the fireworks. So the first movie we're gonna cover is The Devils, or The Crucible for Bad Boys and Girls.
Oh, we're covering this first? Okay. Yeah.
Is that a problem?
No, I just need to flip the page.
You just gotta frantically get to your notes.
Yep.
So I didn't know much about this movie, except that I'd heard it was controversial and banned for a while.
That is exactly as much as I knew about this as well.
And I didn't realize that it had the pedigree of starring Oliver Reed, who, if he were alive today, probably should have played Freddie Mercury in that Queen biopic. I mean, he's the best mustache wear outside of Burt Reynolds.
I did say, I like when a period piece, the actors in it don't bother to change their hairstyle or anything to match that period, so everyone's like 70s up in this.
Yeah, that's something that made me unsure of how I was supposed to interpret this movie. Like, am I supposed to take this seriously? But
we can get to that, the total inconsistencies of it.
It also stars the quote-unquote greatest actress of our time, Vanessa Redgrave. And the movie was directed by Ken Russell, who was known for his flamboyant style and all of his movies being liberal adaptations of existing texts. He actually won an Oscar in 1969 for a film called Women in Love. He did The Who's Tommy, and he later did Altered States, which I saw about 20 minutes of until my DVD started breaking. You ever see that?
You're not missing a whole lot.
Oh, okay. Well, it's got like a little cult following.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of along the lines of 2001... like that. I think it's trying to go mooch off of that popularity. And what's the one wherever they try and kill themselves to get off?
Wait,
and so they work in the hospital. They remade it. It's not Dead Ringers. It is
Tommy Knot. No, where the Kiefer Sutherland movie?
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
Flatliners.
That's it.
Yeah. Wait, they try and kill themselves?
Yeah, that's how they. Bring themselves to the brink of death so they can see the face of God, and then they bring themselves back to life, but things come back for them.
I didn't realize that Martyrs ripped off that movie so bad, huh?
Yep, exactly. I mean, the same.
Basically,
no difference.
Just a French Flatliners, apparently.
Uh-huh. That's how they take all the skin off of Keith Sutherland at the end.
That's how I would describe it if I worked at a video store.
Mm-hmm. Did you work at a video store back in the day?
I did.
That's Captain a good Video. Time. Good time. Blockbuster myself.
But I always wanted to, you know, sell Audition as a lovely Japanese romantic comedy and be like, well, I never finished it, but I got about 3/4 of the way through and it was pretty charming. I do remember, I think I used to work in a movie theater also.
Mm-hmm.
And there was like, we had these like sign, it was United Artists, I think. And the slogan was just like, enjoy the magic or some shit like that.
Yeah.
And like fucking old people would always be like, when's Enjoy the Magic coming out? And I'd be like, oh, soon.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. So Warner Brothers refused to release this uncut version of the film. And I think what we've watched is the censored version.
Yes, because I read through the Wikipedia entry, and there's a lot of scenes like, I don't remember that in this at all.
I don't understand, because in 2017, there were actual news articles about Shudder releasing the uncut 109-minute version, but this is definitely not that, so I don't know what happened in between then and now. The most significant cuts include a 2.5-minute sequence featuring naked nuns sexually defiling a statue of Christ, with a priest looking down on the scene and masturbating, and another scene near the end of the film showing Sister Jean masturbating with the charred femur of Grandier after he was burned at the stake, which I guess we showed the femur, we don't see the masturbation. I guess it's implied, right?
Yeah.
The natural implication when someone drops a charred femur in front of you is like, well, someone's going to be masturbating with that.
Yeah, when I saw this, I'm like, I don't get why this is banned. I mean, like, this is anti-church, sure, but it doesn't seem that bad. And knowing that these scenes were perhaps the reason makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, although, I mean, it is, we'll get to it, but it's a little more than just...
Yeah.
There's some stuff in here. But anyway, due to the controversial publicity, this was the biggest movie in England for 8 weeks after it debuted. One British film critic called the film monstrously indecent, in a television confrontation with Russell, leading the director to hit him with a rolled-up copy of the Evening Standard, the newspaper for which he worked, and in an interview decades later, the director said, I wish I hit him with a tire iron. In some kind of fun interview questions I was reading more recently, when they had talked to Russell's about some of his decisions, they're like, why portray the king as a cross-dressing homosexual who shoots Protestants dressed as birds in his Royal Park for fun? And he says, because that's exactly as I saw him. It's fair. Film critic Judith Christ called the film a grand fiesta for sadists and perverts, which sounds like grand marketing, but I mean, her name is also Christ, so conflict. I mean, she might be Christ's grand great 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 granddaughter for all we know, to get that last name, right?
Yeah, that's what the Da Vinci Code was about.
And there's also, if you ever want to see a kind of interesting Roger Ebert review, this was like one of his more petty and nasty reviews he's ever done. The whole thing...
He hated it?
No, he didn't even hate... I mean, his thing was, like, dismissive sarcasm. Mm-hmm. His whole review is saying how much he liked it, but he's being sarcastic. He wrote, A burning at the stake, an afternoon in the rack, head screws, a douche with boiling water, nails into hands, induced vomiting, ripped tongues, dead babies, human target practice... possession by devils, rape, transvestism, nude orgies in the nunnery. Put them all together and they spell committed art, because these are modern times and I certainly hope none of us is opposed to truth. Although it's weird he puts transvestism in with, you know, ripped tongues and douche with boiling water and rape.
Well, obviously he'd be canceled today.
Yeah.
And presumably this was a review from, what, the 70s, 80s?
Yeah. There's some lines in his review that actually kind of make me chuckle. It says, we are filled with righteous indignation as we bear witness to the violation of the helpless nuns. It is all the more terrible because, as Russell fearlessly reveals, all the nuns, without exception, were young and stacked. I like seeing Roger Ebert write stacked.
Well, remember, Eater was also a notorious lech, I believe, as well.
You should have been loving this, then. He also wrote, the story has gone untold for too long. Aldous Huxley wrote a book about it. John Whiting wrote a play about it. But only Ken Russell has made a movie about it. And then he wrote, now they spoke quietly. This is about the other audience members. Now they spoke quietly among themselves of the atrocities they had witnessed, or hoped to witness soon. Listening to them, I felt we could all sleep a little sounder from now on. If the movie industry had more hard-nosed, tell-it-like-it-is artists like Ken Russell, Loudon might never happen again. And he's being sarcastic. You want to take it away? Or do you want to talk generally about what you thought about? Or, I don't know, however you want to handle it.
Yeah, let's take it away first so we can get at everything.
First, what's with the fucking aspect ratio of this?
I think that's just Shudder doing a bad job.
Did they rip this off VHS? Kind of reminds me of like when I had a Pentium processor back in the day and I couldn't have Quake on my full screen. I couldn't handle it. So I had to put it at like 3/4.
No, I'm sure they just, you know, either did a bad job recording it or the only version they had available was not a great one.
Okay.
Which sounds like the case. Anyhow, The Devils from 1971. we open with the barely legalist, based on a true story language, you know, followed by a drag performance that would probably be shocking in the 70s, but if you've seen Hedwig and the Angry Inch, yeah, I mean, this is nothing. Franch is teaming up with the Catholic Church to go after Protestants, and, you know, we get the king, and we get Richelieu, who you may remember from all those, I want to say the Three Stooges, but I mean the Three Musketeers movies. I don't know much about this, you know, this time in France, because who cares about France? So we go to a nunnery in this little town, and the Reverend Mother and the nuns are watching a funeral with a hot priest, and, you know, this is hot priest played by Oliver Reed, is, you know, he's got this little pageboy haircut and this twirly mustache and this wispy little beard that's driving all the nuns wild because, you know, when you're in a nunnery, there's not a whole lot going on.
Also, all the nuns are, like, in their 20s, right?
Yeah.
Which is a bit unusual. I mean, I guess that's one of Roger Ebert's criticisms, right?
Going on the rest of it, that is a stylistic choice.
Yeah.
This is a super stylized film.
Yeah.
So the younger nuns are watching this funeral to see this hot priest, and, you know, the old Reverend Mother comes in, and the Reverend Mother is not old, but she's got a hunchback, so everyone thinks she's hideous. And I thought she was going to be some kind of classic weirdo that comes in, she's like, hee-hee, cackling like a little witch. But, you know, she's just kind of a regular weirdo in this.
Yeah.
She chases the rest of the nuns off, but that's so she can have a orgiastic vision of the priest. Hypocrisy much? Yes, there's a lot of hypocrisy in this entire film. I think that's probably part of the point of it.
Although, there was probably a time when a film about religious hypocrisy felt transgressive, but now I feel like I'm more shocked when a film shows a religious person is presented as, like, an honest human being.
Yeah, no, you good know? Luck with that. I mean if you want to watch a God's Not Dead, that's the only way you're going to see something like that.
That's fair.
So she's got a hump, but even in her fantasies, she still has the hump in. Like, oh, you're pretty dead on yourself, and if your fantasies include all your horrible stuff. And, you know, this fantasy of her banging the handsome priest, you know, the people in the little town in her dreams start yelling at her, too. So she just can't get a break.
Maybe she just incorporates that into her, you know. She's so stuck on her shitty life, she incorporates that into her fantasies.
The priest is also a hypocrite, as we find out, because he's banging what I thought was a prostitute, but it seems to be the daughter of some sort of magistrate in town. But I, again, not knowing much about France, she's all painted up. So
yeah, I didn't understand why she had a painted face. Yeah.
We've all watched Amadeus. Everyone's got the painted faces in that. The reasoning behind it, I don't know. Fashion, I guess. So it turns out he's got this lady pregnant, and he, you know, instead of being a thoughtful priest, he just kind of pieces out carefree. But when he leaves, he starts flipping his shit on some quote-unquote scientists trying to kill or cure a lady of the plague. And, you know, he ends up killing her so she could be with God, because why would a scientist? I mean, these are like plague doctor scientists, but they're at least giving it a try. What's he doing? Not a whole lot.
Well, I mean, what they're doing is they're putting like wasps on her body.
Yeah, but I mean, that was, I guess, science of the day.
They should have known it was wrong.
They got to figure out what this plague. I mean, perhaps lying down with a stuffed alligator is not the way to go, but... You know, they're doing something.
So this priest, I guess, in the one sense, he's a hypocrite because I don't know if he's a hypocrite because he rationalizes it. He's like, well, the Bible says it's better, not good for man to be alone. So
that means, he sits down with one of his little buddies at the plague pit and kind of goes over like, yep, I've got this really self-destructive nature. But, you know, if I keep this up, it'll be quicker to go see God. That works.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he is concerned about the suffering of others.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, like, it is weird that the beginning of this film sets this guy up as the villain,
yeah,
and then he kind of becomes the hero at the end.
Yeah.
So the magistrate of the daughter he had impregnated shows up, and, you know, they try and sword fight, but the priest kind of fends him off with a stuffed crocodile. So we see this guy is kind of a cool priest, fighting with crocodiles. Some government men come with a big machine to tear down the walls of the town they live in, because that's the only thing protecting, you know, them in this turbulent times in France. And the priest is like, hey, the king says we can keep this up. And then he gets the town all riled up to stop this guy from doing it. And he's like, well, I guess we gotta go talk to the king to get the official word. And yes, the king is a lunatic who is dressing Protestants as blackbirds, having them run around and then shooting them at that point. So, more commentary?
I mean, makes a fun visual.
It does. There's definitely, if nothing else in this film, there are plenty of fun visuals, for sure.
Yeah, it certainly has a manic presentation to it. At least for the first half, that Again, I wasn't sure how to interpret things as, like, am I supposed to be moved by any of this because they all look like glam rockers in the 70s? There's a kind of, like, gonzo silliness to a lot of it. But I guess in the last half, it actually becomes, I don't know, more typical, but also, I think, a little bit more interesting. But
yeah, like, this film was kind of all over the place tone-wise. So I would say the first half is, all right, this is kind of a straightforward film. We get a little weird, but not too weird. And then we kind of dip into just pure madness for a while. And then we come out the other end like, okay, this is a logical end of this film.
Yeah.
Or a film of this type. The Reverend Mother's having some more visions of the priest as Jesus. And, you know, writing letters about how we'll save them and flagellating in presence and in penitence. But at the same time, A, the priest is marrying the daughter of the dead lady of the plague who we couldn't save. So, not great.
Making the Christ in the fantasy look like a young Ron Jeremy. I mean, isn't that what Scorsese essentially did in Last Temptation of the Christ?
It's true. And this came out, what, 18 years earlier?
Yeah. It's Trailblazer.
Exactly. I mean, I do think this film is probably a trailblazer.
Yeah.
I did not see a lot of this stuff around that time. And there's a reason that gets, you know, can't see it for all those years. That's the word I'm thinking of. Yeah. Now, the government man and Richelieu plot to take over the town in some weird church archive where Richelieu's getting wheeled around Hannibal Lecter style in, like, a push cart type of thing. I mean, I think this is where the film shines, and scenes like this that are just like, oh, we're crazy stylistic. Not a whole lot else than that, but at least it's something visual to look at.
I also didn't mind all, like, the young nuns running around naked scenes. Those are visually interesting, too.
Yeah, we'll get to that. The Reverend Mother finds out that the priest is married and freaks out. You know, she attacks his new wife because his new wife was trying to become a nun. But all is forgiven when it turns out that, the letter she sent off to him, he's going to come and take care of the convent. It'll be fantastic. And she hears the new priest is there in the building. And she runs off all happy and glee and then finds out it's this, his weird, I don't know, sexual predator buddy. The guy who masturbates all the time.
Yeah. I'll be honest, the first half of the movie, I'm like, I don't know what the fuck is going on. And I'm like, all right, when someone's freaking out and then he's being accused of being in league with Satan, then I get it.
But yeah, the first half,
I'm like, what the fuck, what's going on here?
Yeah, when she finds out that it's not him that's going to take over the order, she, you know, freaks out and is like, yeah, Satan came to me in the night and tried to do sexy things to me. And he was, the priest was there too. And it's all his fault for doing this. Because, you know, we all watched Hacksaw. We get how this works.
Yeah, we know how these witch, I mean, this is pre-Salem witch trials, right?
I'm not exactly sure what year this takes place. So those were in 1692.
It's something around the time. It's in the 1600s.
Yeah, in the, you know, everyone was witch crazy for all those years back then. All the bad dudes the priest is pissed off over the course of the film, you know, all team up together to help take down the priest. So, you know, don't make enemies. That's the moral of the story. They bring in some kind of hippie witch finder, which is the best character that I've seen in a film in a long time. Because he's basically just like Andy Warhol almost.
Yeah, I was surprised because he looks so glamish, like early David Bowie, flim-flammy, glammy.
Yeah.
I thought he would be outed as like a hypocrite who's just doing this for his own, I don't know, his own self-aggrandizement. But he is a true believer, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, he is the only one in this film that really believes.
Yeah, like I thought he was going to be, like even at some point, it's kind of revealed that they're all bullshitting because that guy brings in the blood of Jesus prank.
Mm-hmm.
That's the king, right?
The king disguised as, I don't know, some other guy.
And he's like, oh, look, the blood of Jesus. When this is around them, everyone's going to act more, you know, wild and carefree. And it's going to show how they've been influenced by Satan. And then they all start acting up. And then he opens the box and it's blank. But it doesn't stop them from continuing on with the charade.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the hippie witch finder, of course, finds that, the Reverend Mother was possessed by demons, possessed by devils, title of film. The whole thing quickly devolves into some hedonistic debauchery, so the nuns go crazy because they all pretend they're possessed, and then the town goes crazy because they like seeing the uptight nuns get wild and nuts, too. Priest comes back and is all, what the fuck is this? And everyone's like, hey, you possess this lady. Not good. And he's like, I'm too proud to be the devil's plaything. Well, it's a little more character to this priest. But that's, of course, not a good enough excuse to avoid the Inquisition that he's going to suffer. you know, he gets tortured for a while again. Sierra Haxton episode. All that stuff pretty much happens to him. And we get some misery doubling too.
He thinks this suffering might atone for his vain and disordered life because he recognizes he wasn't exactly a good dude.
Yeah. I mean, like, this is the part where this guy kind of turns around, like, oh, you are, hey, you're someone who you've got some faults, sure, impregnating ladies and then piecing out, not great, but also you're not, like, an evil guy or corrupt or, like, any of the rest of the characters. Three confessions.
I have been a man. I have enjoyed women. I have enjoyed power.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a man. I'm one of those. I got one of those three.
One down, two to go.
I haven't been able to have the women or the power yet, but I imagine.
Well, first you get the money, then you get the power, and then you get the women.
Of course, but he's got no money. He's got all the women he wants.
Well, things were different back in the day, I guess.
They should just have all these nuns be menopausal women, then they wouldn't have any of these problems, right?
Well, that would ruin some of the style of this, I think.
Yeah, we don't want to see 78-year-old women naked running around.
So at this point, when the town is acting crazy and the nuns are acting crazy, presumably this is where the nuns having sex with the statue of Jesus would have gone somewhere along here.
There's also some, like, who's the woman that they force to vomit and they give her a boiling water douche?
Like, that's the Reverend Mother, because they gotta get the demon out of her.
I wonder if at that point they were like, she was like, wouldn't she have been like, wait, I'm making all this up.
Yeah.
Or she just very proud. I imagine it must have been interesting to be one of those official court stenographers during the time of the boiling water douche. You'd be like, all right, hold on. Ow, ow, ow. No, stop, stop.
They summed it up as a fancy French word, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure.
The priest gets the whole kangaroo court treatment and, you know, surprise, surprise, found guilty. And he's got to cut his sweet hair and mustache off and also be put to death. But we know which is the more important thing there. The government man tries to get him to confess so the church doesn't see him, like, you know, weak. Because, hey, he's still part of the church. Don't you want the church to seem good? But the priest says, eh, you're tiring. Badass to the end.
Yeah, and I mean, the nice executioner wants to be like, hey, don't worry, I'll hang you first and then we'll burn you alive. But he doesn't get the chance. You know, normally if you see the executioner being portrayed as the, you know, relative good guy, he's like, what? Yeah. I didn't get to hang him first. This isn't fair. He's going to burn to death.
The whole town's there for his burning at the stake party, and as we mentioned, the executioner was, I guess, one of his buddies, so he was going to strangle him before he burned to death to make it a little less painful. He won't confess, he's being burned alive, so even the other priest is like, oh, he must be innocent because he's not confessing. Oh, what have I done? What have I done? Immediately, like, literally the second after he dies, the government man blows up part of the town where all the crowd's still there, and everyone runs away and kind of disperses at this point. He goes into the nunnery and is like, hey, Reverend Mother, he's dead. You can stop pretending now. Also, here's his burned up femur, which, if this was the uncut version, we could watch your masturbating with, I guess. So,
I wonder how long that masturbation scene was supposed to be.
Well, what? They cut 3 minutes out of this?
I mean, is Miss Vanessa Redgrave really gonna really go whole hog on with that femur? I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't know. Do I want to know? Probably not. But someone out there could tell me.
I think you want to know. There's got to be on. It's got to be on YouTube or something.
Yeah, that's what YouTube allows.
Yeah, XTube.
We see the executioner sweeping up part of the blown up town as the priest's now, I guess, ex-wife that he's dead is all dusty and shaken and stumbles out of town and follows this kind of brick road of destruction out amongst all these hanged and people tied to wheels, corpses tied to wheels, stuck on poles. Which is a nice visual, and she kind of wanders off into the distance. And that's the end.
Yeah, so I wasn't sure what we're supposed to make of this movie at the outset. Was this like, is this supposed to be an exploitation film, a pretext for sex and nudity? But I guess I kind of grew to appreciate it more in the last third, even if the whole, like, valiant man who refuses to confess for crime he did not commit under threat of torture genre is well-worn.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the mob imagery at the end was pretty kind of effective and jarring. You know, he does a good job of, like, presenting, like, noise and cacophony, basically.
Yeah, chaos is very well portrayed by this film.
Yeah, and I'm not, like, this might sound like, you know, my senses have been reduced to little, but it's like, I didn't see it as that controversial. I mean, I'm trying to imagine what it would have been like in 1971, but if you also remember in the 70s, what A Clockwork Orange came out. Mm-hmm. When did 120 Days of Sodom come out? I don't know.
I think that was like later.
These are also movies that have been banned, so I'm not saying that these... But, I mean, having seen Clockwork Orange at a young age, I don't know if I see this one as necessarily that shocking. I mean, so what are the really shocking scenes that are still in this movie? I guess the orgy scenes with the nuns.
Mm-hmm.
There's the forest vomiting, there's boiling water douches, and there's cupped wasps on that dying woman. I guess were hard to watch, but in total, those are probably less than a minute and a half of film time.
Yeah, I mean, I would not be surprised if her portraying him as Jesus and having sex with him.
Yeah, I have a feeling that's
the thing that was, what put them over the edge.
Yeah.
Because as we know, at least in America, violence, no one cares about that.
Yeah, no one cares about that. Yeah. And I thought there was a little bit too much of, I don't like A Clockwork Orange, really. I think it's kind of a silly, confused film about what point it might be trying to make.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I also don't really like about it is I feel like, the home invasion scene and the later when he goes back to the same place where he did the home invasion, there's just so much, silliness to all that.
Clockwork Orange is supposed to be partially a comedy, while this I was not aware was supposed to be a comedy.
Yeah, that's what I wasn't sure about. This has to be partly in jest, because, with the crocodile fighting scene and the, just the attire that they're all wearing and mm-hmm. the kind of just gonzo nature of a lot of it in the early stages.
Shudder's billing this as a horror movie, but Wikipedia bills it as a drama.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
And I laughed through a lot of this. A lot of it's supposed to be comedy. So I don't want what is this?
The gay cross-dressing the king making people dress up like blackbirds so he could shoot them. I mean, that's
mm-hmm.
fucking goofy, you know?
Yeah.
I wonder, does this open up Shudder? Could Shudder now, have Last Temptation, or, a Passion of the Christ or Braveheart on their platform? Because those are also movies about, people.
Well, they've got all those Yakuza films.
That's true. I mean, I guess they could just do whatever the fuck they want now, as long as there's enough violence in it.
Yeah.
I guess they would go on the it's a exploitation, niche film.
Mm-hmm.
So that fits. But, yeah, I mean, this most definitely is not a horror movie whatsoever.
Yeah. I mean, I was looking, I mean, horrific thing, sure, but horror,
yeah, okay. I mean, even if you look on Rotten Tomatoes or Metacritic, they try and, retroactively, maybe, because it's been, I don't know why exactly, but they try and toe the line of this being a horror movie, but it is most certainly not a horror movie.
I mean, I guess that's probably the easiest niche to sell it as, hey, check out this horror film, and not, hey, check out this fictional drama.
Yeah, some, I mean, I guess you could describe it as, shocking or horrifying in scenes, but certainly not a horror movie. Yeah, and the director said it's supposed to be about a sinner who becomes a saint, so your feelings toward it are accurate. That's what he was going for.
Paid it off.
Would you say, I wouldn't say I was disappointed exactly, because I didn't really have any expectations, but I was like, for some reason I thought this was going to be, I've heard about this movie for so long that I thought it was really going to be, what am I, I can't believe what I'm watching.
Uh-huh. I mean, what's going to do that these days for you, though?
Probably just, a film shot at a slaughterhouse. And then
that's the only thing left to make you feel anything.
What is wrong with me? I think I told you the only thing that I watched that made me question, what is wrong with me was when I was watching Bum Fights back in college.
Uh-huh.
I was like, why did I buy them? This is terrible.
Why did you buy them?
I don't know why. I think I just bought it as, a lark. I heard about it. I'm like, oh, it sounds funny. It's like Jackass.
Were you watching Comedy Central late one night and one of those commercials for something with a video came on and you were thinking it was Girls Gone Wild?
Well, I was definitely watching Comedy Central late at night. But I was like, oh, yeah, it's like Jackass. But and then I watched it. I was like, God, this is so fucking depressing. What am I? Mm-hmm. I honestly felt like I'm a bad person.
Yeah, you are a bad person for liking that.
I know. No, I didn't say I liked it. I said I bought it, sight unseen. So I was like, yeah, damn, this is terrible. Mm-hmm. And I felt terrible. I gave more donations to homeless people when I saw them.
Very good, very good. Like how I made that donation to our local synagogue after I watched Hanukkah this year, because I felt so bad.
I mean, I think there was a homeless person who got a fiver off me because of how bad I felt.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I'll kind of go along the same lines as you, as for this being such a quote-unquote shocking and unavailable film, watching it, I was like, okay, I mean, this isn't that bad. Perhaps with the excise scenes put in there, it would make more sense. I'm like, there's some unpleasant stuff in this, sure, but it's not like, oh, I'm not totally blown away.
And he makes it more appealing because, as Roger Ebert points out, all the nuns are young and stacked. So it's not the grotesquerie of, like, you know, old people doing anything, which is disgusting.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in making it so stylistically interesting, you now have taken away the drama from it, or the horror from it. So now it's more of a, oh, well, this is weird looking, so I've got to look at it this way, as opposed to if this was taken more seriously.
So would you recommend this to others?
I could recommend it as...
My question turned you into a feral dog for a second.
Yes, it did. It was my trigger word to turn me into one. I mean, I could recommend someone as like, hey, this has been unreleased. It's certainly interesting, but I would not say that it is good. Like, there's still a lot of problems with this, but I think it is interesting enough if you are a film connoisseur to, you know, say, hey, check this out. It's got some stuff.
Yeah, I would say to my film aficionado friends who are, I'm like, hey, this is a movie that's been banned for X amount of time and have quite controversial when it came out, and it's a little bit of film history available at your fingertips. To those type of people, I would recommend it to. But to your normal workaday citizen who comes home and, you know, Johnny, I was going to say Johnny Dump Bucket, but that's not an expression.
Johnny, I think Johnny Garbage Bag was a character Johnny you mentioned Lunchbox. Previously.
You know, I'd be like, don't bother.
Yeah, I mean, this is a tough hill to sell a normal person on.
Yeah, it's a tough hill to sell that Shudder subscription on. If you're on the fence about Shudder, well, let me tell you about a movie. Well, speaking about Shudder, let me tell you about another movie, a Shudder exclusive, The Dark and the Wicked. So, Derek, before you went into this, who are you rooting for, The Dark or The Wicked?
Oh, The Wicked, all the way.
Definitely. So, this is the newest film by one Brian Bertino, who you may recognize as the person who wrote and directed The Strangers back in 2008. You saw that, right?
What did you think of The Strangers? I did see it.
I know it's now become a bit of like a cult film where it's quite popular, and I don't know if I'd say beloved, but it seems to have a very good reputation. I kind of just remember when I saw it, when it came out, I was like, all right, that was...
Yeah, that was pretty much my, like, I guess
a through line of many of his movies might be there's a kind of like nihilism, pointlessness to a lot of it. And I don't mean pointlessness as a pejorative. I mean, random nihilism, things have no explanation, this is what it is, man, type of thing to it. Although the monster didn't really... I don't know, did you see the monster?
That with the mother and the daughter in the car stuck in the woods, and I was not impressed by that one either.
Yeah, I would say I don't remember a single goddamn thing about that movie, except it was critically reviewed, and then I remember watching it being like, all right, that was whatever.
Yeah, like my memory of The Strangers is not a lot happens, some people break in, Dennis Reynolds shows up, and then The Strangers 2 had a big soundtrack by Kim Wilde, and that's my whole Strangers franchise.
I didn't
see
Strangers 2, did you see it?
I did, I think I liked it better than Strangers 1, but it definitely got sillier.
I mean, my remember of The Strangers involved Ethan Hawke, and then I looked it up, he's not even in it, so...
Is it Brett Speedman? Someone, is that the guy?
Yeah,
Scott
Speedman? But who the fuck? I don't even know who the fuck that guy is. Is he an Ethan Hawke lookalike? I swore that movie was Ethan Hawke and Liv Tyler. But
I think he was in all those Underworld movies.
Underworld movies?
Yeah, the vampire versus werewolf was action there, films.
No, he wasn't.
Scott Speedman?
Oh, I thought you were talking about Ethan Hawke.
Oh, yeah. No.
No. My Brian Bertino, he's a guy.
Yeah, Scott Speedman, boom.
His films seem to get pretty well reviewed by critics, especially for horror films.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say this is his next attempt at taking a 10-minute concept and spreading it out to 90 minutes. So I'll see if I could summarize this movie in 5 minutes. Consequence-free jump scares.
Hey, you've got 4 minutes and 55 seconds left.
I think I nailed it, though.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
This might be the movie in the most... So, the running for the most consequence-free jump scares, I think. So, what is this movie about? It's basically... There's a family farm, a haunted little family farm, I guess somewhere out in Texas, which already, suspension of disbelief. I mean, family farms still exist. Thought Monsanto and Bill Gates took care of that for us, right? So, there's a haunted little family farm out there with the patriarch of the... family farm is like dying and in, you know, it's basically an invalid in bed, And then the mother seems to be having difficulty keeping things together. Her two children visit her, a daughter and a son. They're there, and creepy things begin to happen. That's the whole movie.
Yep, pretty much.
We'll go over it in, I guess, in some detail here. But first, I was just a little bit contrived as to, like, why is the patriarch of this family, an old dying man kept on oxygen, not at the hospital? Like, is he able to eat? He has no IV tubes. Is he
just, hospice stuff.
Is he not eating, drinking, and just shitting himself all day?
So oh, they, what's the nurse do?
They have an aide.
Oh, they stab her eyes out.
They do have that aide to come over and help, but it's much more expensive to have a live-in aide than just bring this guy to the fucking hospital on Medicare or something. So it was a little bit
maybe not in Texas.
It was a little bit contrived to me that they're trying to keep this guy in the house. And then even later, a doctor shows up when they're like, all right, we got to get this guy to a hospital. The doctor's like, no, I'm not letting him go. In my medical opinion, this man must die in this room, basically. I'm like, the movie needs to have this guy in the house, I guess, because I guess the plot of the film is that a devil or Satan or something is slowly sucking the life out of him for unexplained reasons.
Yeah, one of them Satans that you get, you know?
But I guess that's also part of Brian Bertino's thing. I mean, which is could be well executed if, you know, you don't need to have an explanation of everything, right?
Yeah.
But I guess it's just up to your imagination why Satan is so, why his soul is so delicious, it must be slowly lapped up.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas everybody else can kind of just get killed in a second. So in the movie, they're just basically hanging out at the farm, and then the mother seems to lose her sense of reality, I guess you would say. She mutilates her fingers while she's cutting food up and then hangs herself.
Yeah, so this is one of the scenes that I thought this film did well. Like, you'll see a film that he's sitting there with a knife, cutting carrotsling on a chopping board, and you see it get really close to the fingers, and you're like, oh, she's going to cut those fingers off. And of course she does, and you're like, well, we've seen this a million times before. And he just starts, like, going to town on the stumps of the fingers and, like, hacking them into tinier and tinier pieces. Like, oh, that's taking a gross twist on this. I like this.
Yeah, I didn't... Logically, I don't really know why she did that, since she just immediately hung herself afterwards, and it didn't really seem to be any, like, reason for her to do that other than to get a gore scene in there.
Hey, devils do strange things.
And also, I thought the whole atmosphere was pretty well done with the lonely farm. There are wolves howling outside, and there's old people, which are naturally scary.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what he does well. Like, there's certainly an atmosphere to the stranger. There's an atmosphere to this. Monster had an atmosphere. He puts that together pretty well. It's just filling it with more things that you care about seems to be the problem.
And I would say the character notes, or like the brother is kind of the whole tight-lipped, square-jawed Heath Ledger impression from Brokeback Mountain kind of thing. You know, man of few words, the baseball cap and all the sodomy.
And fewer razors.
Yeah. And then there's an old man cowboy type helping neighbor who we know exists in this movie solely to die at some point because he has no other purpose. And so really the movie is just them at the farm after the mother kills herself. Either not really exactly even piecing together what happened, just being like a series of strange and pointless jump scares occur while they don't decide to leave for a while and then don't decide to bring the father to the hospital and just kind of sit at this farm while increasingly sillier and quote-unquote scary things happen. I also don't get it, like, after the mother kills herself, like, the brother's like, maybe we should take him to the hospital since he's just, like, upstairs dying. And she's like, no, it's what mom would have wanted for him to stay here. But it's like, perhaps your mom was not in sound mind since the day before she just cut her fingers off and hung herself.
Yeah, so the film takes place over the course of a week, and I don't know if it needed to take place over the course of a week. Like, it would have made more sense as to why they had to stick around and not solve their problems if they were there for, like, 2 days, 3 days.
Yeah, I mean, one of the whole days is just dedicated. It's like Tuesday, then it's like mom cuts her fingers off and hangs herself. Then it's like Wednesday. It's like nothing else happened that day. How was your day?
Not well for mom.
And then they find a diary of the mom, replete with references to some kind of devil watching over them. I think diaries now exist primarily by haunted characters in horror movies for exposition purposes.
Uh-huh. You know? Yeah, it's just like a video game. You know, you gotta go run around and find the diary, and it tells you more stuff.
And it's just basically an endless series of consequence-free jump scares. Like, the daughter imagines she sees the father staring at her while she's in the shower. She hallucinates spiders coming out of her dad's mouth. Lights turn on and off for no reason. There are spooky noises, glass breaks, and shadows lengthen. The mother seen floating around outside. The silliest one by far is the daughter wakes up with lipstick smeared all over her face. And then she walks by her father and sees, while he's passed out on the bed, there's a lipstick vial next to him. Which, I mean, what is he creeping around putting lipstick on her face while she sleeps? Like,
yep. What's classic dad.
And it also doesn't make sense because he's like clearly an invalid hooked up to tubes. So the phone rings and then her dead mother will say, "I told you not to come." Although, since it's later revealed that the devil can seemingly attack anyone anywhere, I'm not sure why it matters that they're actually at the farm.
Yeah.
An ominous priest shows up and says weird shit about devils and wolves at the door. He gives them the business card and then the daughter calls him. And then he picks up and he's like, "I have no idea who this is or who your mother is or what the fuck you're talking about. I live in Chicago in a hotel room. And I actually had a daughter who sounds like you who died of suicide." So it's kind of like, is the devil printing out fake business cards and like handing them out? And like, when she noticed,
the devil just runs around the other country grabbing business cards for people.
So is the devil
saving them for bad days?
Is the devil going to Kinko's to like print out the cards and figuring out the motel rooms? And when she notices this is a Chicago, not an area code, not of Texas.
And please, the devil uses Vistaprint.
How does the devil make the phones ring? Like, is he haunted AT&T?
I mean, the devil can do whatever it wants.
Is that why they don't respond to my many complaints? So it's, I always have a feeling, like, this thought of, like, man, in any possession or devil moon, like, the devil has a lot of fucking free, I guess they say, you know, idle hands are the devil's plaything. Uh-huh. There's a reason for that, because the devil's just fucking sitting around, got nothing better to do than fuck around, like, this is what the devil do. He makes prank phone calls.
Yeah, he's one of the jerky boys.
So, I mean, it's just a lot of, like, these little jump scare things. Yeah, and it seems like he could kill anyone he wants at any other time, because he makes the neighbor kill himself, like, pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's another part I liked, when the daughter appears to the old neighbor as, like, a weird kind of jumpy either reverse film or reverse slow motion or something like that of her like slicing herself apart in front of him. That was pretty good.
That's a pretty good image, but I didn't understand. But I mean,
like, this is the thing, like, this film has a couple good images, and then other than that, not a lot going for it.
Like, I don't get why the devil bothered to harass this guy and have him kill himself.
Mm-hmm.
He also doesn't live at the farm. Like, I thought this was a haunting either based on the father's presence at the farm or on the farm.
Well, he's been a farmhand for so long that the devil's like, "Oh, you're practically part of the family."
I guess it extends to occupation, so he could attack all
farmers. A real Olive Garden situation. When you're here, you're family.
Like, immediately when you're imagining your father staring at you in the shower or smearing your face with lipstick or your mother floating in space, wouldn't you be like, we gotta get the fuck out of here, something weird is going on?
Mm-hmm.
And so the brother at some point leaves because he's like, "I'm done with this shit." But then the devil's still able to torment him, even though he's driven, like, presumably across Texas back to his household. But the devil's still able to play visual tricks, a psych trick on him, where he comes home and he sees his family dead. But psych, it's just the devil playing tricks on him. So he kills himself while his family comes home. So again, the devil doesn't seem to be bound by this household. So the devil can really basically do whatever the fuck it wants at any point to anybody for any reason. Why it's slowly killing the father when it could just kill anyone instantly, who knows?
I mean, what's the fun of that, though?
It manifests that something, it kills all the goats on the farm.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it can manifest itself in some way to kill people if it wants to. And the movie kind of does the same trick over and over again, where it's like, "Hey, there's something spooky over there." "Oh, wait, no, there isn't." Then, "Oh, wait, no, it's behind me." It's like, "Oh, no, I imagine it, or it's a dream."
Yeah, so this kind of fell into the same problems that I had with Oculus, where it's like, none of the stuff I'm seeing is real. Why should I care about it?
Well, Oculus, one, had that hot Scottish girl I like a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And two, had a kind of a unique premise. And I like the flashbacks in Oculus.
Okay, so the real stuff in Oculus, not the fake fantasies that they're being projected.
Okay. Yeah, so that's just basically my problem with the movie, is that while it is visually well done and has atmosphere, there's no real plot or development to speak of. And the movie just basically ends by...
Yeah.
What, how does it even...
Another jump scare?
Yeah, it's like basically everyone's dead except the daughter. She's sitting around with her dying father. The aide has killed herself because she went crazy from the devil. She sees her mother approaching, singing a creepy sounding carol, which I think religious songs exist primarily in horror movies to sound creepy and ominous. And then she looks and sees her mother there, and then the father jumps on her, and then the movie ends.
Would you, though, in this film, as it is laid up, preferred an explanation? If they were like, oh, the devil was buried under this farm years ago, that's
no,
why the devil's
I wouldn't
here.
Have preferred an explanation, necessarily. I mean, well, I guess I might have preferred an explanation as to the limits. Like, you know, horror movies work, I think, a little bit better when there's some kind of, like, rules that we can understand. Mm-hmm. So with this movie, it really is just, like, I even omitted other jump scares. There's like the supposed granddaughter of the guy, the farmhand who kills himself, shows up, but then she just turns out to be the devil playing another dumb trick. There's a dream where the main girl wakes up and her father's on the ceiling. That's just a dream. I didn't know what the powers of this entity are. It could just do whatever it wants at any point. I didn't get why. I guess it's hard to, like, how would the movie rationally explain what's going on?
Because, well, I mean, I don't think it can, which is perhaps wisely why they did not. But, I mean, they could have put, like, I don't know, maybe they, on the yard somewhere, they show some kind of, like, devil fetish thing around, as though you can give some implications for what it might be, that I think maybe that's the best way to circle this square, as opposed to flat out telling you something that's going to be not helpful or good.
There could have been a DVD copy of The Devils somewhere in the farmhouse.
Could have been.
Uncut version, which The Devil's not going to allow you to have that shit anymore. Yeah, I mean, I didn't... There wasn't any suggestion that their father was anyone of some kind of importance or something that would have the devil sucking away at them.
Yeah, I mean, this has the most evil thing of bad things happen to good people. However, that's not interesting in a film.
Although we're not even sure if they're good people. Like, we don't really know anything about them.
Yeah, I mean, it's true.
Presumably they're good people. I don't know why it all seemed to come to a head now, you know what I mean? Because it seems like this devil had been sucking away at the father for some time, and the mother had been dealing with it all on her own. And it's just when the two kids show up is like when things kind of go haywire. Yeah, I mean, just at the end of the movie with the last scene, I kind of felt like my bigger problem wasn't that there was no explanation, which is fine with, I'm fine with that. It was just more like there's nothing to this. It's just like there has to be 15 jump scares that of no consequence. So what are we watching? What is the and then the way it wraps up is just like, okay, he jumped on her face. They're dead. I guess.
I mean, it's a step better than the whatever possession movie ended with. Go to this website to find out more.
That's, I mean, not by much, though.
No.
Yeah, I guess just because when you're waiting, I guess my feeling about these jump scares, or jump scares in general, I mean, one or two jump scares just to keep the audience awake or something, or to give them a little fright is one thing. But each jump scare, to me, makes me have a greater expectation that there's going to be something worth this delaying process.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have 15 of them that are getting exceedingly sillier and sillier.
Yeah, you're just edging and edging, baby.
Yeah, I'm kind of like, all right, is this going to pay off in some way that's going to make it worth me watching an old man scribble lipstick on someone's face? Probably not. And then it doesn't. I'm like, all right, that was I feel like I fucking wasted my time.
Mm-hmm.
I could understand why it got good reviews, kind of, because it's like it's well made. It's some of this has some nice disturbing scenes. There's the atmosphere of this like lonely farm is pretty well done. Like looking at that lonely farm kind of creeps me out. It's like imagining how lonely and desolate and wolf infested it is.
Yeah,
that,
I mean,
that was all well
atmosphere.
Done. Like it's like artfully made.
Yeah.
So I could see where I can kind of see this playing in front of like a general audience and they being scared for a while. Although you can only sustain so many of these. It was all a dream. I imagined it before. Mm-hmm. Everyone's going to start getting agitated and bored.
Yeah.
But I could see it playing to a crowd for a bit, you know?
I mean, unlike some other Shudder films, I could see this being in a theater, certainly.
Yeah, I also felt like this might make sense as an acquisition for Shudder, because it's like a respectable movie.
Yeah.
It's not like the Shed or some of the other bottom basement garbage.
It's not the Ranger.
That they acquire. Wait, what's the Ranger?
The Ranger?
Oh, yeah, goddamn. Yeah. So it's like a real movie, but yeah, I was just disappointed in it. I was actually looking forward to it. It was the one I suggested we watch. I think I suggested.
And now here we are. This grab bag has failed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I still wanted to see these movies. So, but I would actually recommend The Devils before this one.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think there is something worth seeing in The Devils.
Yeah.
And this is fine, but you don't need to see it.
No, you don't need to see it. You've already kind of seen it already.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's pretty much it.
Well, we took our bag. We grabbed some films out of it. Right.
But the goal was to get them off the list.
Yeah, and we certainly have. And the bag's still open. What bag's still open. Films could be in it for next week?
And next weekend, I have high hopes. I know I say that every weekend, and then the hopes are dashed, but I have a feeling the next movies we're going to watch will be pretty good.
I've heard one of them is okay.
You just heard okay?
Yeah.
Oh, that's disappointing.
And well, the other one I'd never heard of at all, so...
Well, okay is a step up from where we normally are, so...
It's true.
All right.
Adios.